Blog Talk Radio.
Radio listeners. This is Carolyn A. Brent calling from caregiverstory.com, your Why Wait station. I tell you, I'm excited. I'm always excited. Every day I'm excited, but I'm really excited because I have a very, very, very special guest, someone that I've known for over 42 years. And no, this is not a relative, it's not a brother or sister or blood relative. It is a person that I went to high school with. And what makes this person very special, he has created Living a Life of Legacy. Now, his name is Dr. Thomas Bonite, by the way. But before we delve into who he is and what he is, I just want to share something really special. A couple of years ago, I interviewed him on my show about living a life of legacy. And now we're talking 2.5 years later about, are you creating a life of legacy? Now, why I wanted to interview him personally, I know there's a lot of people out there that call the show week after week. And as you know, I have other hosts that are graciously hosting caregiverstory.com, your Why Wait station, because God has allowed me to be busy on television. But I come back and I like to interview people that I've interviewed before as a follow-up, because many of you have asked, Carolyn, where does your passion come from? And I simply state that my passion comes from my soul, my S-O-U-L. My soul defines my passion. So my passion defines my mission, and my mission defines what I do, which will be my legacy. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Dr. Thomas Bonite. He's a very modest person, and I know he's not going to want me to delve straight into, you know, his bio, but I really got to share with you who this person is. He's not just a handsome face on the social media. Dr. Bonite was born and raised in Denver, Colorado. He is a well-respected educational administrator and attorney. Dr. Bonite graduated from Western State College in Gunnison, Colorado, with a double major in political science and elementary education. He holds a doctorate of jurisprudence from Texas Southern University's Thurgood Marshall School of Law in Houston, Texas, as well as a master's and a doctorate degree in educational administration and supervision from the same institution. Now, I got to tell you, he has so many degrees. It's just like a thermometer. Just every year he gets another degree, and I get real excited because the more we educate ourselves, the more we educate our children, we can have a better world. So I got to tell you, I like that. Dr. Bonite previously worked in the Houston District Attorney's Office. His educational experience encompass work as an assistant principal at Fort Bend Independent School District, Denver Public Schools. Dr. Bonite also has been a principal in the Houston Independent School District and Denver, Colorado Public School Systems as well. Dr. Bonite currently is the founder and executive director of Knight Educational Training and organization which he teaches literacy to children and adults by developing innovative educational programs, creating associated curriculum, and teaching skilled tutors. Now, I got to tell you, that was a mouthful. Help me to welcome my friend and a person that I really admire, Dr. Bonite. First of all, thank you for being a guest on caregiverstory.com, your Hawaii Weight Station. How are you?
Well, thank you. I am well, thank you. And thank you for giving me an opportunity to come back and visit with you and share a little bit more about what we've been doing in the time that we've been apart from our last interview.
Oh, that's great. And before we get started with Dr. Bonite and I start asking questions, if you have a question for Dr. Bonite, please press the number 1 or your pound sign, and that'll indicate to me that you have a question for Dr. Bonite. If you don't do that, I won't know that you'll have a question for him. So, Dr. Bonite, could you please clarify, make it really, really, really clear? A lot of people think that they know what legacy is. They think that, you know, if they leave a house for their loved one, that's a legacy. Or if they, you know, leave a lot of money for the courthouse so the family could fight over the money, that's a legacy. Could you delve into and make it really clear, what is legacy and why is legacy important? And I've noticed with the work that you're doing, you're talking about that there's 4 fundamental areas concerning legacy. Now, I know that's a mouthful, but you could take the ball and run with it.
All right. Well, first of all, I go by the basic premise that if there be any truer measure of a man than what he does, it has to be or it must be what he gives. And developing a legacy is allowing yourself to be remembered in a manner which portrays you in your most favorable life. Yes, I do break it into 4 categories: a life well lived, principles to live by, the importance of a spiritual legacy, and 4, and finally, the impact legacy and financial legacy. And basically, a lot of us know what we perceive to be is a life well lived, but what I aspire to do is to try to tailor how people will remember me. A lot of times what we do is we live and we think that, you know, we're doing, whether we were the Heisman Trophy winner or what we've done in our lives is how we want to be remembered. But my concern is, you know, what people will say about me, you know, when I'm gone, that he was a good man, that he always shared, that he took time, that he read to the children in the schools, and that he helped to make the world a better place because he was here. And I think that's incumbent upon all of us. All of us are charged or have the responsibility to leave a legacy. And by that, I mean a positive legacy. There are positive legacies and there are negative legacies. And I think it is so important that we leave a positive legacy. I always share with individuals and people that, you know, my father always said that your name and your word are the 2 strongest bonds that you have. You have to have a good name. So when people mention your name, that people think good things about you. And if someone were to say something bad about you because of your name, they would know that would be true. But unfortunately, sometimes we have unfortunate legacies. One of the examples I always use is Charles Manson. When you hear the name Charles Manson, you think of, you know, horrendous acts and different things. And so when people mention your name or when they call your name, you want to make sure that they think of you in a positive light and that they think good things. And that's what a legacy is all about, trying to tailor or create an atmosphere or an environment where people will say, yes, it was a life well lived, and that they think good thoughts and that the world was a better place because this person was here.
You know, that's outstanding, and that reminds me, every week or every time I get a phone call, people talk about this one word called purpose. Can you really, really share the difference with purpose, legacy, mission. And the reason why I asked that, because there's a lot of people that figure, you know, there's Joe Blow down the street, and I really like what they're doing, so I want to copy off that person. I want to be like that person. So how can we get individuals to create their own without trying to copy off of someone? That's my question. How can we get a person to really understand we all are born with a purpose and a mission?
And that's a fundamental premise that I also believe. I believe that we were all given a purpose on this life, and some of us spend a lifetime trying to develop or find that purpose, whereas a legacy, a purpose would be like, you know, my purpose here on earth was to save the children, the homeless children, to provide a fair and equitable education for all children, to create an atmosphere where their brotherhood abounds and that people get along. And God charges all of us with a purpose. It's just us finding it. And I just believe that, you know, we wander or we occupy this earth until we find that purpose. But once we find or acquire that purpose, then we live in that purpose, and that's when we find true joy and true happiness. Now, a legacy is something that we do to create the culture or how we will be remembered. I want to be remembered as a person who always was there for people who tried to make individuals' lives a little better. I really have a heart for the children, because the world that they live in now with the gangs and so many things, we live in, you know, cyberspace where, you know, the internet and all of these things have positive and negative, but unfortunately sometimes more negative influences on these children. And so we can always point out, you know, what's wrong with the kids, but what are we doing to correct it? I always hear people say, well, you know, the children need to pull up their pants, you know, they don't need to curse as much, you know, they're so disrespectful, they have a spirit of entitlement. Okay, so what are we doing to correct that and to mold and make them into the individuals that they need to be so they could be successful? We have to pour into these young people. We have to pour into the people who are going to take over when we have to sit down and let them guide and direct us. And that's the way, you know, life really is. You know, I always feel that, you know, that it's incumbent upon me to go back, to reach back, and to bring as many forward. But there's going to come a day when I can no longer go back, and I won't be able to bring anybody back. And so hopefully at that time, some of those individuals that I've helped to bring over to the other side, that I've helped to mold and to make, that they'll be able to take me and help transition me into my life, you know, when my earthly life is
right
here.
Right.
I hope that, you know, when I transition into my new life in heaven with the Father, that, you know, they will be there to help usher me into that transition. So that is my belief, and that is my goal, that we're all here to each one reach one, each one teach one.
Wow, that is, woof.
Yes. Dr. Bonnie, this is Jarrell Jones.
How you doing, Mr. Jones?
Good, good. This question, as you were speaking about the internet, is it okay? I hope it's okay to interrupt. But
absolutely.
As you were speaking about the internet, the access that kids have in cyberspace today, and so this is, I'm going to preface this question by saying I do understand that this is a very difficult thing to do. Leaving legacy or teaching people that legacy is important. This generation, this me kind of self-centered generation, and it's not their fault. I don't believe it's their fault. People always say, well, you know, it's this is the lost generation. I always say, okay, well, who is responsible for keeping it? Those are the people that we need to be talking to. But
right,
the idea that, you know, shows like World Star Hip Hop are so popular with young people, this me self-centered attention-seeking you know, attitude that people have, that's promoted largely by, you know, social media, which can be a good thing. I think social media can be a good thing, but like you said, more often it's not. How do I get invested or involved in helping this generation, this younger generation, even millennials, understand that legacy is something that's important to leave? That if you don't leave a legacy, if you're not remembered as a healthy person, a person who was good and kind, that influence is dead. And
right,
this vacuum will be filled with the stuff that we have now. How do I get that across to a generation that seems to have never even heard of such a thing?
I think that's a very good thing, and it's asked to me all the time. And what it is our kids, believe it or not, are looking for role models. They're looking for people, you know, believe it or not, and I tell people this all the time, and they don't believe it, but they at home, unfortunately, and in other places sometimes they have this sense of entitlement. It's because I'm here, you owe me this. And the parents who, you know, they don't pour any love into the kids. They think that they can buy them. I'll buy you a pair of Jordans, and that means I love you, you know. But, you know, during the rest of the week, you know, you're on your own. I don't communicate with you. I sit you in front of the TV, or I send you outside, and you go play with your friends. And when, you know, you decide to come in. And so I found that the kids are looking for role models. And if we're not there, because I know when I was growing up, I had good role models. I had individuals who poured into my life, who would, you know, sit me down and talk to me. And, you know, and they would say, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm not a perfect person, but, you know, I'm telling you this. I bumped my head. So if I'm telling you something, I'm trying to save you from, you don't have to bump your head to know that it hurts. And so I'm here to tell you. Yes, I bumped my head and it hurts. So, you know, don't go down this path. And we have to be those role models. And unfortunately, you know, the TV and the internet and all of those things are becoming the role models of our children. But they need to see
Absolutely.
Us as individuals, people that they can connect with emotionally, in activities, doing things together. And they want to be a part of your life, and they want to do the things that you do. I share this story all the time with individuals about, you know, some of my students that I have in my life that when I dress a certain way, you know, they always say, well, you know, Dr. B, why you always wear a suit? I said, because you deserve it. I want to make sure that I'm a good role model for you. I want people to look at me and say, yes, he's a good role model for the kids. And they really, really buy into that because, you know, they have to see, and I call it connecting the dots. They have to be able to connect the dots. They have to see,
right.
Well, what's in it for me? Because that's the first question they're going to ask. Well, if I do this, what's in it for me? What do I get out of this? Well, the way people perceive you, they're more willing to give you a job. They're more willing to do things for you. There, you know, there are benefits to being, you know, or acting in a certain way or speaking in a certain manner or extending, you know, kindness to other individuals. And again, they have to see the benefit of all of these wonderful attributes that we want them to display. They have to see how it's going to affect it, how they're going to benefit from that. And so I hope that I've covered that question. But to make the long story short, it's being the role model that they can respect and they want to follow because, you know, we can want it for them, but they have to want it. So you have to carry yourself in a manner which they say, hey, yeah, that's what I want to be. I want to be like that gentleman right there. I want to do the things that he does because I want to emulate or be like this person.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And as you were speaking, another thought came to my mind because you said role model, and I think probably – you know, because so many of these children are disconnected from role models like yourself. I mean, I'm sure you don't have 600 children. So on the end of, you know, I really believe in mentoring as a major tool for this to influence people. So I guess I would like for people to know that when we say role model, it's not just going to be role model from a distance or role model from visiting every now and then. It's going to be some very active going back. Or reaching out to these kids. Because when I think of the situation that most of today's kids are growing up in, and I know you know this, but the idea of the debt trap that parents are in. You know, I don't think any parent
right.
is trying to fail, you know, but the American dream is kind of set up like this. I got to get a good job. In order to get a good job, I got to go to school. So to go to school, I got to get into debt, right? So I go borrow
right.
that money, I go to school, then I get a good job. But I got to get a good car to get to that good job, so I got to get some more debt. And I got to buy a house, and I got to get some more debt. So by the time I establish my family or want to build a family, I've got a whole bunch of debt. So this is where the television comes in and the daycare. And so a lot of times
right.
the model, you know, looks good, but the parents aren't able to spend time because they're still trying to get out of the debt And so the television and the social media and, is actually developing these kids' minds. And so we're going to have some proactivity in going back and filling that vacuum, or that's really not a vacuum, but go back and fill that space with our mentoring. Does that make sense?
Let me interrupt one moment. Those of you who want to call in, please call 909-362-8206 and press the pound sign or the number 1 if you have a question for Dr. Thomas Bonite and or Pharrell. Pharrell is doing a great job. I think you should be the co-host, Pharrell. Thank you very much for all your fabulous questions and input. This is great. Continue.
Okay. Yeah, I'll probably start by saying Fernando Jurrell Jones.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I love it. I think it's wonderful.
And I know exactly what you're saying, because I remember when my father, back then, the man, he sat the wife down, and he worked, and I remember my father working 2 jobs. He was military, and then he worked at a warehouse, and he did all this other stuff. And as kids, we would wait to see our dad, but sometimes he wasn't there, and so my mom, she was there, doing the domestic things and raising the kids. And, she always, I remember getting the switchings, go out there and get a switch, and you better not bring a little twig back. You better bring the right size switch. And if it became a situation that she couldn't handle, I remember sweating in bed, knowing my dad was going to get up early, and I'd gotten in trouble, so I'm in bed before, the sun even went down, and I knew when that door swung open that, he was going to execute discipline. And so, we had to get ready for that. Yes, and so it's some of the same things we're going through now. And unfortunately, and we talk about this all the time, the latchkey kids who have to come home, let themselves into the house, lock the door back, call the parent and say, I made it home. And then, it's an unfortunate society that we live in, and these are some of the truths that we have to live with. But again, we have to be the work ethic that our kids see. I remember seeing my dad work hard, and so I know that, in order to have anything, you have to make certain sacrifices, so you have to work. And unfortunately right now in the world that we live in, that requires it. But we have to make time for our kids. We have to, you may not make all of his games, but you're going to have to make some of them. And I know my kids have accused me of doing the same thing, because they just said, Dad, sometimes you just weren't there enough, And so it's a balancing act. But you have to instill in them that you love them, and that, the things that you do are for them, and that, if I could be here, but I'm so proud of what you're doing. I encourage you. My dad couldn't be there, but he paid for those, $7 canvas Chuck Taylor tennis shoes that we used to wear, that we used to, I thought were the most wonderful thing in the world, and, not the $100 Jordans, but, back in the day, those were, those were the bomb. And that's my father worked to get those for me, and I did things around the house, and I knew that, that it was a quid pro quo, something for something. For my work around the house, my father would provide those things that, I wanted or felt that I needed, to be, participate in sports, or to do what I needed to do to dress, or to be like the other kids that went to school. And so, and those are the things that we have to teach our kids. That's again part of the legacy that we want to build. Like I said, my father's main thing was that, if you do something, you make sure your word, if you tell somebody you're going to do something, you better do it, because that's, your word is your bond. That was his favorite word. I remember him telling us that your name, when people say, Bonite, they want to make sure that, they say, oh, yeah, that's a good kid. He comes from a good family, And so those are the type of things that we have to instill in our kids. And I think they're missing sometimes. And unfortunately, our parents aren't coming, being a parent doesn't come with a handbook. And so we don't always know what to share with our kids or what type of things. And so it's a trial and error method. But I just say we have to be the best possible people that we can be, that we have to instill whatever good and righteous things that we know that should be in these kids, teaching empathy, fair play, equity, all of those things. And then just, trust and believe that God will take all those things and multiply them and make our kids what they are called to be by Him, the Father in Heaven.
Yeah.
You know, I have a question. This is the question I have. We're talking about kids. We're really talking across all ages. It starts from, as Angela James says, it starts from the womb all the way to the tomb. So let's get to the middle part of life. So let's say that a person, they don't have those role models, and we know that there's plenty of people that do not have those role models, and then they go in down a different direction. How can they change their legacy? And anyone can answer this question because I'm going to put it out there. How can they change their legacy from that being bad and turning it around for good? And is it ever too late to create a positive legacy? Can anyone take that ball and run with it?
I can.
Okay.
Because one of the things that I do is I actually work with everyone from 18-year-olds to, you know, 80-year-olds. And I have a system that I've developed, and it's not something I knew. It's kind of, you know, pulling together things, and I call it ADD. It's I'm going to add something to your life. You have to deal with people as individuals. You know, because everybody has a different perception. I work in the field dealing with people who come from myriad dysfunctions, but A is about assessment. You know, I let the people tell me what their perceptions, particularly about God, about themselves, and about others are. Now, I know that they're going to be skewed because I understand the society that we've all been developed in. We've all been developed in the system. The second thing is, after I've understood what their twisted perceptions are, is to deconstruct them. Now, I use the Bible as a source because I think God is the greatest psychologist in the world. He invented the mind. He knows how it works. And it is in the scripture how it works. And then, you know, once I've deconstructed, you know, what they believe, and I can now reconstruct and develop. The last D is develop them. But one of the things that I always emphasize is I give people permission to discount or devalue what they have learned up to this point. And the reason I do that is because if you're not getting out of life what you have expected life to be, then that means that your math is not right. Your equations are not accurate. If you were looking for six and you have not assessed that you put one and three together and it won't never come up to six, you know, that's a kind of basic formula. So I give them opportunity to discount or devalue what they've been taught up to this point. Jesus Christ puts it like this: you have to start all over again, be born again and become like a little child. Well, that means that you have to develop another belief system. Historically, we have thought of things that are okay that are not. I want to point out some of the places that I feel like things really turned. In 1800, if you wanted a family, if a man wanted a family, he had to go out and get a plot of land, and he had to put a house on it. He chopped that house together one tree at a time with his axe because he didn't have any chainsaws. Then he had to hunt, and he had to be able to hunt, trap, fish, farm, all that stuff. And a woman could respect that. And so when they developed their children, when they raised their children got their words. And so a legacy, and you said, Dr. Bonite, you said that your name was important. Well, that stuff was important then, because the children were all raised up in that. So when I'm dealing with an adult who has no idea, our divorce rate is 50%. You know, 70% of all African American children are raised in single parent homes. The whole idea of communal relationships, familial relationships, and your word meaning something, and your, you know, that's lost. I have to go back and actually give them permission to grab history, you know, again, and say, and be okay with saying that no, the American dream, the way we've understood it, is not healthy. It's dysfunctional. It's self-centered. It's self-seeking. It's hedonistic, and you know, emphasize all the ways that it is. Did that make any sense?
And, and to kind of dovetail on that, you know, and I know this cliche is just overused, and it's the African proverb that it takes a village to raise a child. And, you know, everybody throws that term around, but there's another part that I think is more important to that, and kind of the way that, you know, we were raised and we live our life. And that is that, and we are the village. It takes a village to raise a child, and then we are the village. So that means we take ownership in. I remember when I was growing up that if I did something wrong in the neighborhood, Miss Donaldson down the street or Miss Tanaka across the way, you know, she could come out and spank me, and then she'd call my mother and say, Donna, I'm spending time with David back home. I just spanked him because he was out here doing this in the street, and when he gets home, I'd spank him again, you know. And so it was a community effort. Everybody, you know, when we went to school, when I went to school, you know, we walked to school. All the kids walked to school. My brothers had, you know, Miss Coppridge in first grade. They had Mr. Curtis in sixth grade, you know, the parents, the community. And it was a community effort. And we've kind of lost that now. We've kind of disconnected. And being in the education field, I know sometimes, you know, what we deal with as educators and how the parents sometimes, you know, they don't come up, you know. We can always be assured that the parents, and this is not all parents, and so I don't want to make a blanket statement, but the parents that show up on awards day, you know, at the football banquet and different things, you can just about tell when the parents, but at the PTO meetings or when we're talking about grades, you know, they're not there. But again, I feel that that's part of our fault because we have kind of, you know, it used to be where parents were partners in the education. And now it's sort of like, well, parents, we've got this. And so they're not, the schools aren't as inviting as they used to be. And it has to be a community effort because if the kids know that the parents feel that education is important, then they're going to buy into it because they're getting it at home and they're getting it at school. But when, you know, the parents come up there only when they get in trouble and I'm going to show my kids I love them because I'm going to go support them, even though I know my little Johnny's messing up in Mr. Curtis's class. And so what we have to do is, again, become a neighborhood, become a village, and we have to raise these children with expectations and the way that we want them to act and the manner and which that we expect for them to behave. And I think that's been kind of lost. And, you know,
what I think you're saying is that the parents have to be mentored because that's what I'm doing. The 18-year-olds to the 60s, 80-year-olds, I'm mentoring them and how to deal with their children, how to develop it. So, that you know, that's the second level. You talked about Dr. Carolyn. You talked about how, you know, from the cradle to the grave. You know, everybody has been affected by this. You know, I think that many of us, you know, in my generation think, because, well, you know, I look at these gated communities, and God knows I think that they're beautiful, but I have friends that live in gated communities, and it looks like almost ghost towns. I mean, you don't see anybody waving at one another across the way, or, you know, they're not getting together for barbecue. I know people that live right on top of each other and have no idea who lives next to them because community is not valued anymore.
This is Angela. Carolyn, were you going to say something? Because I had a statement I wanted to make.
Before you go on, anyone that wants to call, please call 909-362-8206. I see you on the line, and if you want to ask a question, please press your pound or number one, and I will allow you in the queue. Angela, what would you like to share?
Thank you very much. Angela James, A Vision. One of the things I wanted to say is a solution that we found in my neighborhood, on my street. I'm going to say a couple of three streets. There were, you know, kids going around, called themselves forming a little gang, and they started breaking into people's homes. Well, most of the people on my street are my generation, 50-somethings, and we grew up under the same kind of principles that Dr. Bonite's talking about that he grew up under, and we just kind of watch all of that disappear. But we care about our neighborhoods, and we don't want them to become places where you're afraid to go out your door. And what we decided to do, and you know, I guess I said because I'm passionate about it, I took the leadership on it and decided to go knock on neighbors' houses and ask to have a meeting. we developed the neighborhood watch, but it became more than that because we actually knew who the kids were. And so we would begin to make a presence, to have a presence in the street. We'd come out to our mailboxes and start talking. That stopped a long time ago. So we start bringing things back that we grew up with, or going up the street during Christmas. You don't decorate just your neighbor, your mailbox. You know, you decorate five or six houses down or up from you, which starts to bring the community together. And we realize we're working for a common goal, and that is that the burglary stop, and that the kids know that there's accountability. And especially with the men really stepped up and start being present. And so I'm saying this is one neighborhood, one person saying we can make a difference. It might be one street, one neighborhood at a time, but whoever has the vision and the passion to want to move forward in something like that, it's a way that we can start the trend moving in the other direction.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm sorry, Dr. Bonite, what did you say?
No, go ahead. No, nothing. I was just amen.
Oh, okay. What I was going to share is that I am hoping, world, that all of you listeners, regardless of where you are, if you're in the U.S., the U.K., or wherever, we have to start creating legacy within our family. I think once people get to where I'm at, and what I mean by that, I deal with people on the back end. And what I mean by the back end, when they are adults fighting in court, trying to get this and get that, and families being torn apart, the legacy being thrown in the trash, those are the people that I deal with. That is why I'm an advocate, and I plead with America especially, create a legacy. Stop the fighting amongst the family members. We've got to really go back to the very beginning, protect our children, protect our – if it wasn't for my father pouring into me what he poured into me, and I thought he wasn't – I wasn't listening to him. I thought, Dad's just going to lecture me some more. I'm not going to listen to him. I'm going to close my ears. But when that time came and I needed to talk to my father and he could not respond – that was when everything he ever said to me, it was so registered and recorded deep in my soul. And I find myself repeating his exact words, and I thought I never paid attention. So parents, keep talking to your children, regardless if they close their ears, regardless if they walk away, regardless if they don't want to speak to you, because they are listening to you. You got to take my word. I'm just trying my very best for families to create the legacy. You know, when people are happy and they could can mend, you know, relationships. So by the time when someone passes away, that they're not fighting in courthouse, hospitals, or at the graveyard. If anything, family should create that legacy, because that's all you really have when you boil down to it. Because try fighting the system, the judicial system, and find out if they're your friend. They're not your friend. They'll take your money, but they're not your friend. So I will forever, and this will be my legacy, is that families should love each other. That's why when God calls me home, God could call me home tomorrow, and I already know what people are going to say about me, the lady that cared about caregivers and the elders. And the reason why I say that, when Wikipedia built a profile for me, they call me a legislation elder care advocate. I did not name myself that. I was named that by I don't know who named me that, but that's what my name is. So I am honored to have Dr. Bonite to talk about where legacy begins, what it is, Angela James to talk about legacy. And I'd like to say something about Angela James. She has been my spiritual mentor. She's the person behind the scenes that is a fighter. I call her my angel, in human form. Because she's behind the scenes, she prays with me, she fasts with me, she's a fighter to help with legacy, to help getting laws changed so that families can hone together. And I'm really honored to meet a future host, which is Fernando. I asked them to be on this call to speak with Dr. Bonite. And Dr. Bonite, it just the bottom line is this. He was creating legacy back when I knew him in the 70s. He was always a leader. He was always doing good. And those of you who haven't had an opportunity to view, it's called Journey, what is it called, the to the End of Time? What is it, Journey Unlimited?
Journey to the Outer Limits.
Dr. Bonnard? Journey to the Outer Limits, which won a national award. And I actually took the time to review that video, and he was only like 17 years old, and what he learned as team building. And Dr. Bonnard, can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Well, basically, it was they took affluent high school students and non-affluent high school students, and I fell in the non-affluent high school students. And myself and another young man, Bobby Luna, we were going to East High School at the time, and Colorado Outward Bound had come to our school recruiting individuals to get involved in their 10-day program. I forget what it was. And so me and Bobby said, yeah, that looks like something that we would want to do. However, God blessed it, and it ended up being a, what was it, 27-day expedition where we trained in Colorado for 3.5 weeks, and then we trained, then we climbed a 19 to 20,000-foot peak in Lima, Peru, and it was all about team building. And it just talks about, you know, the blending of cultures and how you have to give and take, and, you know, how the affluent deal with the non-affluent, how they're perceived, perceptions. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me to learn, to be exposed to some things. You know, we left the United States. I had never left the United States prior to that time. I had never, you know, did technical rock climbs. I had never mountain climbed or rock climbed on a glacier. And out of 21 students, 14 of us made it, and I was just lucky enough to be one of the individuals who made it. We had a young man named Jorge Luis Lozado, who was a gang member in Chicago, and, you know, it kept him out of trouble during that time. Unfortunately, you know, he ended up being deported and sent back to Puerto Rico, but, you know, I'm sure the lessons that he learned, and he's probably building legacy back in Puerto Rico right now, but never too late to change. You always have an opportunity to build a legacy. If you can give, then you can build a legacy. And that's the thing, up until the time that you're called home. And so that's the one thing, if I could say anything, you know, your ability to establish and create a legacy is always with you. So, you know, never give up and always, you know, aspire to do that, to design a method or design a way that people will think of you in a favorable way and that the world will be a better place because you are in it and you have lived. It's not what you acquire during this life, but it's what you give. And that's what legacy is all about.
And thank you. And also what you constantly share with me, one brick at a time, as far as building, and also you can't eat an elephant at one time, just one little tiny bite at a time. So folks out there, we can all, if we work together, I know I used to think I was by myself with the caregiving advocacy, and God has sent so many wonderful people my way to help, but God sent me Angela James, and she's the person that stays up with me 3 o'clock in the morning, praying with me, praying for me, scraping me off the floor when I feel like I can't go any further. I mean, we all need someone that is that we assigned ourselves to, that, you know, that God puts in our spirit to help. So get out there, help somebody. You got to help somebody, a child or an adult. I know that God has given me the gift to help caregivers and their elderly, but also there's the 30 and 40-year-olds that I'm reaching from the fitness standpoint so they could help their baby-booming parents that are couch potatoes to get off that couch and take care of their body. So there's something for everybody. If you have a question, please call 909-362-8206 and press the number 1 or pound sign to be in the queue to ask Dr. Thomas Bonnard a question if you have a question. If not, let's take the show. We have 15 minutes left. Boy, I'm excited. Dr. Bonnard, one question, what about a legacy between couples? What can we do as adults to stay married, or if you're divorced, re-get married? How can we as a family, because it all starts with the family, because we're talking about latchkey kids, we're talking about single mothers raising their kids. How can, and Fernando, you could hop in on this too, because you guys are the two guys on the phone. How can couples stay together so the kids could have solid role models? That's why the kids are all, they're scattered every place, because there's not a mother in the home or vice versa, and they don't know what from what. So I was fortunate enough, my parents, I lived with both of my parents until I was 12 years old, and then my father raised me. That's another story, that's another show. But, you know, my daddy taught me, like what Steve Harvey said, you know, think like a man but act like a woman. So I do think like a man, but I'm really feminine like a woman because a man raised me. So can you guys talk about the family, husband and wives or couples, or what, you know, couples raising children?
Okay, I'm going to let Dr. Bonnot give the more scholarly answer. I'm going to give you the kind of layman.
Okay.
Just observation. Okay, you know, earlier I said that we have accepted some things that are just not healthy. What family was designed to do, if family is actually the core institution of every institution, and discipleship is the same thing as raising children. You know, Christ gives you that model. I think the TV dinner is responsible for the destruction of the American family. Now, I know that sounds funny.
I agree.
But here's what the TV dinner allowed. The TV dinner allowed us, nobody has to cook, right? So there's no love going into the meal. There's no sacrifice going into the meal. So we don't have to eat together as well. You get your plate and you could go to your room and so on and so forth. All right. So that and the television, which, you know, I think would have been really good tools if we'd used them properly, probably began with the radio. But the idea of not having to have conversations with each other, communion begins with communication. And so there were elements of that we incorporated and began to depend on. You know, I'm working, so I ain't got time to cook. So we ain't got time to talk about what happened in school, what's happening in your mind, how are you processing this information that you're receiving on the television. And today it's even worse because the iPhone and iPads and all that stuff allows the whole world to come in. So now the direct influence, because there's no communion in family, and it's normal. You know, by the time we invented this thing called adolescence, which allows for children to go through these stages of rebellion, which is actually not real. The reason that this came about was because of lack of communion early. So by the time a kid's 13 years old, he's going through puberty, he don't want to talk to you anymore. He's got a sign on his door, says, keep out, this is private. Right? And we respect it because we say they're going through a stage. But that wasn't the way it was. When a kid was 13 years old in the Hebrew culture, right, it was, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased, bar mitzvah, this is the son of my commandment. Right, but it's not just Jewish cultures, but it's old African cultures. You know, when communion is done right early on, the kids want to hold on to your words. You know, I think that we've just accepted some things about family that just ain't healthy anymore. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right about that. Whoa, that's heavy. Dr. Bonnot, do you have something you'd like to share with that?
I do, and it also circles around expectations, and for me and my house, because there was the father who said this was the expectation, that when the street lights come on, you come in. You'll be here, and you'll sit at the table, and you'll eat everything on your plate, whether you like it or not. And if you don't like lima beans, well, you're going to eat them tonight. And everyone would go around and talk about, you know, that, again, that communication component, you know, that your mother has helped you, so you have your specific responsibility. You set the plates out, you put the silverware out, you do the dishes when you know, you clear the table, and you know, there were expectations that were set, you know, for everyone. Everyone had a job, a responsibility, and while you were communing, you know, you didn't talk with your mouth full, but you know, what's going on in school, how are you doing in your grades, you know, go, you know, I want to see your report card after everybody gets through eating. You know, did you do your chores? You know, that's kind of when we feel, you know, dad in about what our day was like. And so it was when the entire family came together, and I guess what we would call that right now is a business lunch or a business dinner, because, you know, that's where we discuss what has happened throughout the day and if there were modifications or responsibilities, you know, when you got your schedule, you know, this weekend we're going to be cutting the yard, and so I expect you. And you know, you just had rituals and routines that, you know, that you had to follow. And right now, like, it's so haphazard, you know. Everybody, kids and parents, don't even talk to each other because everybody's face is buried in their phone. You know, I've seen people walk into polls and stuff because their head is down and they're, you know, on the phone.
That's true.
You know,
that's
you've
true.
Seen
but
people
you know, Dr.
walk up.
Go ahead, Dr. Bonite, I call that the Cleaver family. Leave it to Beaver, Cleaver family. Now, what about those of us that do not have a Leaver to Beaver, Cleaver family? Can you elaborate on that? Because there are
most
families
definite.
That don't communicate. Yeah, please talk about the not, because I'm not the Cleavers. My family's not the Cleavers at all. Very far from it.
But
so can you talk about that?
But again, it's the whole expectation. It's the expectation. Even if you're the single mom who, you know, you have to send your kid home, you know, the expectation is that when you get home, you're going to call me and let me know that you made it home. You're going to do your homework, and so I want to see your homework when I get done. And if I get home after you get home, leave your homework out so I can check it and let you know that it's done. It's all about having expectations, you know. The sad thing about it is we no longer have expectations. It's easier to placate our kids. And I had a football coach who used to tell me this all the time. He's saying, you know, I used to always say, Coach, you always ride me. You never got anything good to say about me. Every time, you know, I can always do something better. And he just pulled me to the side and he said, look, let me tell you something. As long as I'm telling you something, as long as I'm taking the time to try to correct and make you a better person, then, you know, you're all right. You get worried when I stop talking to you. And that's what's happened. We have lost that expectation. We're not setting expectations with, you know, we say with our kids, you know, well, my kid's going to play football, so if he could just see his way out of school, if he could just get a thank you, Lordy, and not a, you know, a passing grade,
Lordy.
You know. Yeah, a cum laude instead of a thank you, Lordy, you know. And so, you know, we've lost that expectation. For our kids, and we have to instill in them. We have to let them know that, you know, we want them to do the best, that, you know, you don't just have to try to get by. We want you to be the very best person to be, because that's who God made you to be. That's who you are called to be. But when we, you know, we're too tired to correct our children. We're too tired to, you know, discipline them, and I just have to trust and believe that, you know, my child is doing the right thing, when you know he's not doing the right thing. He's showing up there with all these clothes that you didn't buy. You know that there's something amiss in this responsibility. And what our parents don't realize that, you know, well, they're saying, well, he's a minor. Well, parents are responsible for the torturous conduct of their minor children. And once we start holding these parents responsible for these overt or these covert acts by their children, then that's when they want to get involved and they want to cut a deal, and then they want to get, you know, into the parenting business where, oh, he you won't have to worry about that no more, Dr. Boyne. When they don't show up for school, they've got 30 days where they skip school, and then all of a sudden you've got to go to court and show cause why the court should not file truancy against you for not having your student in school, especially in these compulsory attendance states where children are compelled to go to school. And so, you know, it's setting those expectations, holding our children responsible. Because if we never hold them responsible for something, then how can we expect them to feel that they are accountable to anyone? And what they
right.
do now is the way they determine how many prison cells they're going to need is the number of children who are not reading on grade level in the third grade, mm-hmm. which is just an atrocity to me. Because look at how much time you have to spend with that child from third grade to 12th grade. But they're saying that if that child is off grade level, he cannot read at the third grade level in that third grade, then they're going to build a prison cell for him because they're going to incarcerate him. And prisons
yes.
are big business. Prisons
that
are big
exactly
business.
Right. That's exactly right. I just wanted to add this to the idea of promoting family values again is, it's when you think about the way people in general, not everybody, But family is not as important to millennials and as it is to people our age. It's lost its value. And so there needs to be a reconditioning, a promotion, a campaign to bring back the idea of what a family is supposed to look like. Now, that's not going to be very popular because our culture adores things that are unhealthy, you know, illicit relationships. Women want to be baby mamas today rather than be wives, you know. And so it's men don't want, you know, they want to be studs rather than be husbands and fathers. And so the value system is completely, like the Bible tells us, it's completely upside down. We trade what's good for what's wrong.
You know, Fernando, I'm sorry, but I just had to jump in on that, what you just said. We do not promote at all family values. But I would like to tell a story of a legacy. I am the youngest child of an oldest child of an oldest child of an oldest child of an oldest child. We can go back 9 generations. And I was raised by my grandmother, who also had helped raise her 10 sisters and brothers because she was the oldest. The father left and she helped raise them. Then she raised her 7 children. And then my mom died and my grandmother came to West Virginia and spent a year there before she could bring us back to Alabama where she was. And there were 9 of us. And her other daughter, her only other daughter, and then 5 boys, had 9 children. But the daughter that was left went like they were doing during that period, the 50s and the 60s. She left and went north and sent money home to help take care of the family. The boys in the family who were old enough went to the army and sent money back to help take care of all the rest of the siblings. By the time we were 4 years old, we made a bed like grown folks. We were, it was instilled in us certain values that no one, I don't care how many kids were in that house, no one ended up in the penal system because there were certain things that were tolerated and certain things weren't. One thing we knew was our grandmother was going to tell us one time and one time only. So she had 18 children in the house at one time and 2 adults, her and my father, who had suffered from mental breakdown at that particular point. I'm saying that because the legacy continued with me not having a mom, but growing up with my grandmother and my aunt, and starting as
we have just a few seconds left, Angel. You got to get to your point because we're getting ready to go off the air.
So let me wrap it up. 3 of us were right at the same age, and I ended up raising my cousin's 3 children. My point is that we don't do that anymore. They go to foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to go back in order to move forward.
Amen. And I hate to cut you guys short. Didn't this 1 hour go by really fast? We have 1 minute and 19 seconds. Everyone, I want to thank you for calling in. I see you on my dashboard. You didn't ask any questions, but I want to thank Dr. Bonite. Thank you so much for being our guest. Dr. Bonite, how can people reach you?
The information, the cell phone number that is there, they can reach me on that. It's better if you text because sometimes my phone mail gets inundated, and I'm like the kids. When I see a lot of work on there, I say, oh, my goodness, I can't get through all of those. But if you text me and leave your name, I'll get right back to you. Or I can be reached at drbonite@aol.com. You can drop me an email, and I'd love to connect or talk with anyone at any time. Like I said, we're legacy building, and we're building a better world for the future.
Amen. And Fernando, you have 2 seconds. Fernando? Okay, what about Angela? 2 seconds. Okay.
We're good.
Okay. Well, everyone, regardless of where you are in the U.S., I want to thank you for being on our show from CaregiverStory.com, your Why Way Station. We'll see you next week. Call Embrace Your Uniqueness with Andre from CaregiverStory.com. CaregiverStory.com, your Why Wait Station. See you next week with Andrew Mendia. Bye-bye.